This episode is sponsored by VTech.
Today's episode of Heads in the Cloud, Graham and I are joined by healthcare IT expert Jonathan Edwards, live from the suburbs of London. Talk about everything from healthcare to healthcare.
Heads in the Cloud. With your hosts, David Portnowitz and Graham Potter.
Are you trying to get me to sing?
Why am I humming that song?
Because the English national team
Get out of here.
Isn't that an English football song?
I'm not really into soccer, football. But I'm surprised. Surprised you call it football, David.
I'm talking to you. I was trying to be polite.
Okay. No, that's nice of you.
It's also in the States here. That song we play for graduation.
Is that right?
I don't remember the name to it.
Pomp and circumstance.
Land of Hope and Glory.
What?
Land of Hope and Glory.
Land of Hope and Glory.
Yeah.
Anyways. Welcome to today's episode of Heads in the Cloud. I'm David Portnowitz.
And I'm Graham Potter.
And we are coming to you live from beautiful Sarasota.
As always, sunny, hot. One of these days we're going to take it on the road, though. We are. We have an opportunity, I think, coming up in the not-too-distant future that we'll take
Are you going to tell me about this opportunity?
I'll let you in on the secret when we know what's happening. But we got to get the mobile studio put together. We've got some engineers building that for us at this moment in time.
Yes, and, absolutely.
It takes a fair bit of work to put that stuff together. But I thought it'd be fun
if we also need to get a van wrapped with our
heads on it. Are they big heads? who are you saying has got a big head?
I mean, I think just our logo is just two big heads is what I was referring to.
Okay.
Not your ego.
Okay. No, well, I don't have an ego. You know that.
No, you're an egoless individual.
I am an egoless. Egoless. Is that such a word?
It's an egoless?
He's an egoless.
Or egoless. You have an eagle.
They're in my back garden. So, yeah.
Okay. No, but on today's episode, we're going to have Jonathan Edwards, who is...
Fellow countryman.
A Brit. Also, definitely the most educated individual we've ever had in the podcast.
Oh, yes.
Harvard,
without doubt.
Oxfordshire,
in an area where I lived, and
Abingdale. What did you call it?
Abingdon.
Abingdon
on the River Thames. Beautiful area. Look it up.
I mean,
all three children were born in Oxford Maternity Hospital, so real close by. And I ran for an Abingdon running club many years ago.
Were you like the top runner?
No, I wasn't actually. And a funny story about that. I've always got funny stories. When I first started running with this club, we used to meet on a Tuesday night. So I used to run 2.5 miles to the club, meet up with everybody, and about 50 of us would go out and run. And we'd run out around all these country lanes with all these sort of hedged, walls and whatever. So you couldn't see anywhere. So I had to stay with these guys who were a lead set of runners because I didn't know my way home. I didn't know the air. So I learned to run at a pace way outside of my normal pace, and I became a very competitive club runner and was able to run a sub-3-hour marathon when I was in the 80s. So I wouldn't be able to do that.
When you were in your 80s?
No, I wouldn't be able to do that now, David. And but no, I'm not quite in my 80s yet, but... In the mid to late 1980s, yeah. So, but beautiful area. It's a wonderful area.
I've never been.
So
I'd like
yeah,
to go.
Jonathan, fascinating.
Comes and Jonathan from, comes from Gartner. Decade plus there.
He's another
doing
Gartner,
healthcare IT.
Gartner alumni, and that's a fascinating subject. I mean, we all think about technology.
Yeah, when
but
we think about Gartner, I don't think we traditionally think about healthcare.
No, you don't. Yeah, you don't. And fascinating to think that there's a whole kind of area of technology or analyst focused on that subject.
Well, in today's world, it's huge. I mean, it is absolutely IT space and healthcare are so interrelated.
Yeah.
I think as we get into it with Jonathan, I think one of the things we should talk about is some of the business processes stuff that is still sort of old-fashioned, right? That's still the paperwork,
I think there's plenty of it out there.
But do you attribute that to the fact that these are massive, massive companies that it just takes a long time to make a change?
I think it does. I think people are probably instilled in this older way, older technology.
If it works, why change it? Exactly,
And so I think one of the challenging things for anybody in the technology space is how do you you've got to embrace that technology, but how do you then make people understand what the business value is, sure, of that technology and show real live examples of you know, improvement.
I think implementation is difficult too. You're talking about hospitals that have that are giant facilities that to change a process or to implement a new IT system is a radical thing.
Which could have a dramatic impact on the service you're
delivering. Right, so unless it's been 100% proven out and there's going to be no issues, it's hard to roll something like that out because you're dealing with people's lives. I mean, it's not an easy, you know, it's not something you can roll out and then be like, oh, that didn't work. Let's, you know what I mean? Like,
back to the drawing board. Yeah.
So I think it's a tough field to be in.
Yeah.
And then on the insurance side, you've got these massive, massive insurance companies that, you know, are looking to obviously optimize their processes and to get into use AI to learn about health and how they should
keep costs down,
exactly,
change things and do things differently. And I mean, we all love to hate, you know, on the insurance companies because it's such a challenge.
It's an easy target.
Yeah, it is an easy target. And
no one's insurance is ever good enough, right?
Yeah, rightfully so in some cases. I mean, I could quote you several horror stories. We should probably stay away
They could be a sponsor of an upcoming episode, so let's not throw any under the bus.
No, let's not jinx anything here. So,
but yeah, I also want to ask Jonathan, I was just reading a fascinating story about Theranos, the which was in the healthcare IT space. Fascinating story. If you haven't had a chance to take a look at it, it's gone down in the last couple of years. But, you know, they were sort of the darling of Silicon Valley. They were one of the first big sort of SaaS, or I wouldn't even call them SaaS, but healthcare IT companies out in Silicon Valley. And they were run by this woman, Elizabeth Holmes, and she was sort of the, you know, she was sort of the Steve Jobs of that industry.
Right.
And then it turned out to all be for naught. You know, there was a company, it was basically a company built on lies. And so that's it. And so you've got that whole thing where, you know, if that's just a regular SaaS, if that's a CRM or if that's a whatever, it's really not that big of a deal, right? Because it happens, they hype it up, it doesn't really do what it's supposed to do, and then it just moves on. But when you're dealing with people's lives and you're dealing with their health, and that becomes a whole other
game. Scary? Our organizations got duped into following that. It's almost cult-like.
Yeah.
That people
she had people like Henry Kissinger and George Shultz, I mean, and General Mattis on her board of directors. I mean, these were people who
respected individuals.
Right. That, when you know, say, okay, well, these people are involved, then this company is, and she had, you know, Rupert Murdoch is investing. I mean, like, when you have people like that and Ellison, I mean, you're like, okay, look, she must know these people are all smart. They wouldn't get involved if the technology didn't work. So it just sort of like snowballs.
But so you're convincing people that you know it's real and it's the right thing.
Yeah.
It's like saying, you know, our audio quality is so crystal clear that we don't need video because I can see you.
I can see you in my mind.
Yeah, I can see you in my mind. Because it's so clear, you know,
and
having people believe and sign into, you know, I mean, that's a crazy example, but I mean, wow, that's
no, I mean,
that's
it's a crazy story. So, anyways, let's we want to bring Jonathan on now.
Yeah, why not?
Dial him up.
Can we dial him up?
How many
digits?
How many numbers you got to dial to get to England now?
Oh, an awful lot.
Like 40. We should just do a video.
Yeah, have we got the ability? Have we paid the phone bill recently? Can we?
We're all paid up.
So
okay,
we can
good.
Afford a phone call. But we can't stay out for too long because it will cost us too much money. So, yeah.
That's why we got MCI.
Okay, let's call him up
right
now.
4 cents a minute. All right, on today's episode of Heads in the Cloud, Graham and I are joined by Jonathan Edwards, who is a senior analyst at the Skills Connection, a company that we've had several guests on.
We have, and kind of live in the studio, but not fully in person, actually via video.
Yeah, we've got Jonathan here on video conference, which is always great. Always nice to see the guests.
Joining us from the mother country. I feel it right there. So
is that how you felt when they couldn't bring it home?
Don't let's go there. You'll get a little slap, and
hey,
I can.
We didn't even qualify for the World Cup, so you guys have that over us.
Yeah, I could. Could you have just imagined a finale with England and France? That would have been a bloodbath.
It wouldn't have gone
over too well.
I would have loved to. I mean, the game itself was good, the France Croatia game, but France England would have been fantastic to watch,
wouldn't it?
But you know, just couldn't. Harry Kane couldn't put him through for you guys. But anyways, I digress. Jonathan, great to
have you
on.
Wonderful that you can join us. And why don't you tell our audience where you're calling in from? So we give
I'm calling in from the London suburbs. So I'm based in a little suburb called New Malden, which is near Wimbledon, where we just had some pretty interesting tennis last week.
Yeah.
Have you been to Wimbledon, Graham?
I've been to Wimbledon itself, but I've never actually been to the tennis tournament.
It's fantastic. If you get a chance, you should go. Yeah. It's amazing to go and watch. Yeah,
you sat there and ate your strawberries and cream, did you?
You know, here's my story about strawberries and cream. When I was growing up, I'd watch Wimbledon. My dad was very into tennis.
Your dad is a tennis player.
Yeah. I thought strawberries and cream was like strawberries with whipped cream. And I was like, oh, that sounds fantastic. Yeah. And then when I went there to Wimbledon, I ordered strawberries and cream and I took a bite and I was like, what is this? This is terrible. It was like strawberries with heavy cream.
Yeah.
It's not good.
Real cream.
It's not good.
It's a real deal. You're used to that nasty stuff that comes out of a spray can.
That's good.
That's not cream.
That's mostly air.
Go down to the west coast of England and have some real Cornish clotted cream. Yeah. The real thing.
No, that's part of your chair on.
Part of life's rich, or one of life's rich delicacies, like Stilton cheese. You know,
and mashed potatoes.
Let's go there. We had a big discussion yesterday on mashed potatoes and shepherd's pie. But anyway let's move
so
on.
Jonathan, why don't you tell us a little bit about your past life, what you've been doing, where you've been working, and sort of how you got into the skills connection.
Okay, so where to start? So I had quite an academic career when I was much younger, and got from there into Gartner. So I was in a market research firm in Boston in the US. So I was living in the US after having studied at Oxford and then gone over to Harvard.
Well, hold on. Stop right there. You went to Oxford and then Harvard. So you're pretty much like the most well-educated human on earth.
I don't know. Just lucky. Good talk.
That's a wonderful place to be at.
Oxford, then Oxford. Harvard.
I mean, Oxford is have you ever been to Oxford?
I've been to Cambridge, never been to Oxford.
Okay, so they're very, very similar in terms of the way they look at people.
What do they call punting down the river?
Yes.
Down the river.
You wear your straw boater and what have you. But like, have you been to Henley-on-Thames?
I've never been to Henley. I've only been to Cambridge, no.
Okay.
Anyways, sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, I mean, so I had a great time at Oxford and then over to Harvard, a very different educational system, but absolutely loved it. And, you know, the experience of being a graduate school at Harvard, being able to have access to marvelous libraries, great professors, you study whatever you want, was fantastic. I had an absolute whale of a time. And then kind of thought, what the hell do I do now? Overeducated and unemployed.
There's plenty of way out there, I'm sure of that.
Take my academic skills and use them in the business world. So I got into a market research firm in Boston that led me into Gartner. And it was a unit of Gartner that was the healthcare IT group that they just come into that through acquisition. So I joined them and I really learned healthcare IT from the ground up, really, as a novice, and absorbed it. This was starting 1997. I found I loved it. I found it was fascinating. It was a growing field. There was a huge amount of positive change that can be brought about by IT in healthcare. And massive problems and massive difficulties in doing so. So I thought, this is really cool. And I could see the benefits of it. So I became one of the leading analysts in the health IT team at Gartner and stayed with them in the US until 2003, when I convinced Gartner to let me come back to live in England. I wanted to move back to England for different reasons, but one of which was I saw a great business opportunity for Gartner in health IT in Europe and the rest of the world. Because Gartner up to then had been mostly US focused in their healthcare work, understandably, because that's where most of the spending was going on. But I saw there were all these great, national initiatives going on in Europe, starting up, and Europe and Australia and Middle East, and there was a whole other world out there for Gartner and health IT. So I said, let me move over and sort of help you drive that. So that's what I did, and it was great. I became the agenda manager for the healthcare team. I got really into some new advanced topics like telemedicine. I became the author of the new telemedicine hype cycle. I was involved in magic quadrants for electronic health record systems. I kind of worked mostly in the healthcare provider space, but did some work in life sciences and a little bit with the payers as well. So I had a broad topic area coverage, and I kind of got everything thrown at me that was international. He's Mr. International, let's throw everything at him. And that was kind of really fun. I got to experience a whole variety of vendors, topic areas, countries. And it was great life. So I stayed at Gartner, so it was a total of 14 years. until 2011, when I got poached by a competitor, the advisory board company, that was a niche healthcare research advisory firm that had an IT division in research division in the States that they wanted to take international. So they wanted me to launch and lead a global, they called it Global eHealth Executive Council, which if you look at the acronym, Global eHealth Executive Council spells geek. Our service is geek.
Well, that fits you after going to Oxford and Harvard, right?
Yeah. And our goal, despite the name, was to kind of overcome the divide between technology and business in healthcare. Right. Because the big problem our members were facing was that they were just labeled as IT people, as nerds, as down in the basement, as not connected with the business. No one consulted them. And what we believed, advisory board, and I think it's absolutely true, is that the CIO should be on the board of directors. They should be considered a senior executive, ideally reporting to the chief executive of the organization, and be intimately involved in all major business decisions. But in order to do that, they need to get to a place where they can talk about IT in business-friendly language. And that's really difficult to do. So one of the big things I did at the advisory board in this service is developed a maturity model to help CIOs and CEOs and medical directors kind of come together and recognize where they were with IT, how mature they were or how immature, and how to get further into more mature stage. So I had a lot of fun doing that sort of thing. It was really the interface between IT and business in healthcare. And I launched and I led that program and built it up. And we had about 100 members around the world. And then, things changed at the advisory board and it became time for me to move on. So I left them at the end of 2015 and I became an independent consultant, which is sort of a mad thing to do. But I thought,
Unless it works out, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. And it has worked out. It's been a bit bumpy, as you could expect. You know, you get loads of work and then you don't get have any work for a little while. So all that is been happening to me. But I've had a lot of fun doing it. And I love running my own business and having that sort of freedom and independence. It's liberating. So as you mentioned, I'm a senior analyst with the Skills Connection. I've been with the Skills Connection since about the beginning of this year. Mm-hmm. I've also been for the past 2.5 years a partner at something called the IT Health Partnership, which is a collaboration of independent consultants who specialize in health IT in the UK and Europe. And I've done a lot of projects through them as well. And then I've got my own little business. So I've got a few hats. And the Skills Connection is great because it's a bunch of very smart, very friendly people. The business model is super. It's all about, helping organizations do a better job at presenting themselves to analyst firms.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and we are uniquely qualified to do that because we are former analysts.
Yeah.
And so my specialization at the Skills Connection is helping healthcare technology vendors. So whether they be vendors for the healthcare provider market, hospitals, government sector, or to the payer market or to the life sciences market, I understand this field very well. I've been a former analyst and I can help you do a better job presenting yourselves and getting the best possible story forward to the analyst firms. So that's what led me to the Skills Connection. And it's a cool place to be.
And that's what led you to us because
we know them well.
We've shipped for them over the last couple of years. Yeah. And we've worked with Joel and the team there, and they've been fantastic to work with.
We've seen Joel in here many, many times.
Yeah.
Good friend. He's a good friend of yours, David.
He's building a house over on the East Coast.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, he just wants to play golf. That's all he wants to do is play golf. Yeah.
So healthcare is a fascinating subject, Jonathan. I can imagine it being a real specialist area. It's a challenging thing here in the US, having come out of Europe, and obviously where everybody loves to poke fun at the National Health Service. But when you come to the States, and all the challenges that you see here with healthcare, it's a really interesting thing. So, from a technology standpoint, what's the really kind of hottest thing that you see going on at this point in time in healthcare from a technology standpoint?
Well, there are hot things, and then there are also there are hot things. Everything, lots and lots of cool new technologies around everywhere. So there are apps and wearables and the whole IoT world,
right?
And all of that has been. Burgeoning for years. And there's a huge amount of excitement about that, a huge amount of hype as well. But I think what's ultimately the most exciting is actually getting business value from technology in healthcare, getting actual benefits from healthcare technology is one of the most difficult and most exciting areas. And if you look at the huge amounts of money that has been spent on electronic health records in the US, and increasingly that money's been spent in Europe as well, a lot of organizations have completely wasted their money because they bought Epic or Cerner or other similar systems like this. They spent zillions of dollars and they've not got them implemented. They've not got the clinicians using them. They've not actually enabled any real change in the organization. And in fact, some organizations are finding their clinicians rebelling and refusing to use these systems. And so one of the most exciting things, I think, is how can you help organizations really get benefit out of their investments in IT? Electronic health records is one thing. Business intelligence is a massive area of growth in healthcare. I mean, as we're moving towards the world of population health management and accountable care, and this is a huge deal in the US, very exciting movement where organizations, healthcare organizations, getting paid not for the amount of work they do, not for volume, but for the value they provide. They're getting paid to keep people out of the hospital. They're getting paid to keep people well. They're getting paid not to do things. And that's a complete shift in the economic model that requires a whole new set of technologies to support it. And business intelligence becomes absolutely critical to supporting population health management. So it's about how can you collect all the data from the different systems that you're using, normalize it, and use it to make better decisions and predict and plan for the future.
Right.
So are they looking at like how employees are exercising, or what kind of data are they looking at?
Well, they'd be looking at personal health management data like that, exactly.
Yeah.
And I think what they're doing really, really well is to try and segment the population, because you can talk about the very sick, you can talk about the very well, but there's a whole group of people in the middle that are often known as the rising risk population. Mm-hmm. So these are patients who are in danger of developing a chronic illness like diabetes or heart problem or something. Right. And so it's intervening there in that sort of maybe 30% of the population who need active help with weight management, with diet, with that sort of thing, and getting them the tools that they need and collecting that data and ongoing management of those individuals to keep them out of needing further intervention. So that's a very exciting field as well.
Are you working primarily with health insurance providers, or is it hospitals, or who? What are the kind of companies you work with?
It would be vendors. I mean, so Skills Connection serves technology vendors,
yeah,
and technology providers.
When you were at Gartner per se, like who are some of the clients? Like what kinds of clients were you working with?
Yeah, so at Gartner, it was a lot of hospitals and large hospital systems. So it was organizations like large healthcare organizations that were looking to get better at using technology to improve business outcomes for the patients, and also getting better at things like IT strategy, IT governance, communication of the value of IT. I think at the Skills Connection, we're working with vendors who are serving hospitals,
sure,
and government health systems, and also vendors serving payers and vendors serving the life sciences market.
So like you're talking about like SaaS providers, kind of, you're working with like those kinds of companies?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, SaaS is a big part of the way software is delivered these days, including in healthcare. So yeah, definitely.
Is the healthcare field moving as rapidly to the cloud as other industries are, or is there hesitance there, or sort of because of the sensitive nature of the information, or how is that transitioning happening?
It's moving to the cloud pretty rapidly. But there are concerns about the safety of the information. So, I mean, a lot of what we've seen is private cloud as well. So organizations doing, instead of going to the public cloud, using private clouds within their own domain. So, yeah, because there is some sensitivity around that.
Interesting you mentioned about health records. I mean, I know you get the same thing. It just bugs me whenever I go, and having moved from an area an hour south of here, you got to go through their whole routine, new doctors, if you've got any specialist things. Every time you go somewhere, you fill out a piece of paper.
And when you fill out even in the States, where the
even
US
in the States with all the electronic technology and all the money and all the and you fill out this piece of paper, and they always, always, always ask you to put your social security number on there. It's like putting your national insurance number on. And, you're given. I won't do it because that sits on somebody's desk. And,
yes.
And who knows who's looking at that or whatever. But every time you go to a doctor, or if they send you off to a specialist, say you go to your normal GP and they send you off to a specialist, you got to do the same thing again.
Yeah.
You got to fill out all the paperwork again. There seems to be no commonality between organizations.
Yeah, there's
the
data is not being shared.
Not at all. Yeah.
And this is an example of just a really kind of basic backward business process that is unnecessary, redundant and stupid.
Yeah.
And that shows the kind of huge disconnect between that kind of thing and the ridiculous business processes and the huge possibilities that technology actually provides in healthcare. The massive things, massively valuable things that can be done through artificial intelligence, through data mining.
Yeah, you lose all of that. You lose all of that because you got this piece of paper that, you know.
It goes back to what I was doing at the advisory board, which I think is so valuable, is connecting the advances in technology, the possibilities of technology, with the business processes. Yeah. And the need to actually make the basic changes to harness technology.
Still a big use, and here's a thing that will make you cringe in the UK, still a big use out here of fax, right?
Yeah, I know.
So fax in North America, you know, when I've been back to Europe and I've talked to guys that I worked with in the 70s at BT, and they asked me, you know, what are you doing now? And I explained about Star2Star and how we started the business back in 06. And I happened to mention the fax word. And they all laugh at me. They all shun me and sort of, fax? Who the heck uses fax nowadays? Nobody uses fax. Well, there are verticals here in North America that fax is one of the most dominant technologies out there. You know, healthcare is one of them. The financial marketplace is another one. Real estate is another one. So even though, you know, and we still sell fax as a company. We still sell fax through ATAs, and we sell, you know, to connect to a fax machine, but equally to the desktop as well. But it just blows my mind that we're using a technology that was developed, I don't know, how many years ago? I mean, crikey, I've been...
It's redundant.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely redundant, unnecessary technology.
Yeah. It just boggles your mind. And I can't get my head around, you know, when you think of security and you think of, you know, what's the reason behind that and all the things that you're missing. And that must be one of the biggest challenges, you know, for somebody like yourself when you're bringing technology in and all the artificial intelligence that's around today and the data gathering, data mining and all those good things. So I'm being showed here that mechanical fax and devices in 1846.
My God, that old.
Yeah. So Scottish inventor Alexander Bain worked on chemical mechanical fax type devices and in 1846 was able to reproduce graphic signs in laboratory experiments. He received British patent 9745 on May the 27th, 1843 for his electric printing telegraph. That boggles your mind. So In your profession, Jonathan, that must be one of the most difficult things to be able to, you know, help drive technology, the benefits and all those good things and bring that in and preach that value to a lot of organizations that are still using a technology as old as a fax machine. You know,
what we do as analysts, as what we were always doing as analysts, is helping cut through the hype, because you get technology vendors coming and saying, we can do X, Y, and Z. We can do cloud computing. We can do artificial intelligence, and we can do IoT, and it's all incredibly amazing. And you know, and then the poor old hospital is still using gallons of ink, warehouses of paper, and people pushing carts with paper records through corridors. And so our job as analysts, and also at the Skills Connection, is to challenge the vendors and say, what you're talking is hype. You know, we don't want to hear the hype. We want to hear what the evidence is of how your technology has actually improved business outcomes.
Yeah, use cases.
For your customers.
Use cases.
You know, where's the evidence?
Yeah.
Where's the evidence? And they'll say, well, the evidence is because our technology is wonderful. It's unique. And so, no, that's not evidence. Show us the evidence. Show us the facts.
Yeah, practical.
And I don't think... when we were going to interview, I really wanted to ask you about Theranos, because they're sort of in your space. And I'm sure you know the story about Elizabeth Holmes and Theranos out on the West Coast, who was all hype, basically a company that claimed they could diagnose everyone, you know, your blood test by just taking, you know, a prick of blood and then just like putting it through this machine and then basically giving you all your blood results in 30 minutes. And she had taken it and she had gotten millions of dollars. At one point, the company was worth $10 billion. And then she had Walgreens on board and CVS and Safeway, and she had these big chains. But at every step of the way, there was no evidence, right? Everything was
just hype.
Everything was hype. There was no actual real work done. Everything was fake. And now she's may go to jail for this stuff. I
mean, go to jail.
But I mean, like, yeah. That kind of thing. And to me, those kinds of things happen in the SaaS world. And, you know, there's a lot of hype. But the problem is you're not dealing with someone's blood record, you know, someone's health records and someone's blood tests. I mean, they were doing live blood tests in CVS or Walgreens, I can't remember, in Arizona, and diagnosing people and giving them wrong diagnoses and like telling them like, oh, your blood is fine, or, you know, your liver is fine, or that, and they actually, none of it was true. They couldn't prove any of it. And it was, yeah. I mean, that to me is just a sort of a warning sign for the technology side. It's like, how do you validate those results?
Well, I mean, as it's a sign of the stakes are getting so much higher with technology in healthcare, because yeah. as technology becomes much more involved in the clinical care process, then getting it wrong is not just a waste of money; it's a patient safety issue. You're going to actually kill patients. So the stakes are incredibly high, and they've got to do a better job. The quality of software has to improve dramatically, and the hype has to come down, and it has to be about real meaningful value and evidence.
And it was funny because I just read this book called Bad Blood that was about this whole story, and I think it was the Walgreens CEO or basically said, they said, you know, they came back to him, they had hired an analyst firm to go through it, and they said, look, I don't think what they're doing is real. And he said, but if it is, if the possibility is that they can do what they can do, I don't want CVS to have this. Basically, it was just like, I will pay the money just to ensure that my rival can't get access to that same technology.
Yeah.
So they were so afraid of a technology revolutionizing their business that they weren't on that they were willing to pay, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars to invest in this company that couldn't do anything they said that they could do. Wow. It's a crazy story. If you haven't read the story, I encourage you to read it.
That book sounds great.
A reporter of the Washington or the Wall Street Journal who had broke the story last year. And then he ended up writing a book about it. And the company,
I can remember
seeing
something about it.
The company is super secret about if you go to they still have a website up, but the woman and the man who were running it just got indicted for crimes just last week. And she was also like taken off the board. I mean, it's a great story. You should read it. Check it out, Bad Blood.
Yeah.
But I just was thinking about it when we were going to talk to you. I was like, this is right up your alley, healthcare IT. It's fantastic.
And evidence, and that's you know what it is. It's absolutely critical. It's critical to what we're doing at the Skills Connection, because there's a change going on at the moment in the way analyst firms like Gartner and Forrester and IDC are covering healthcare. In the past, they tended to write mostly reports that were to do with trends, directions, strategies, market forecasts and trends, but not quantitative analyses of vendors versus vendors. Mm-hmm. Now what we're seeing is a lot more head-to-head comparisons of vendors, like magic quadrants and marketscapes and waves and those sorts of, you know, things that actually pit a vendor against another vendor and a range of vendors. And so in those second group of reports, you know, that second type of reports, evidence becomes absolutely critical. If the analyst is just writing about trends and strategies and best practices, you don't really need to, as a vendor, to demonstrate a lot of evidence. But when it comes to being assessed on a marketscape or a magic quadrant, you've got to show a whole load of evidence. You've got to really differentiate yourselves from the competition. And you've got to do that on the basis of business value. So there's a very important shift happening in the way the analysts are covering healthcare at the moment.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I mean, I know what we go through to get in the magic quadrant, and I know the process, you know, all the evidence, and I can't even imagine on the healthcare side, just the...
All the variables.
Yeah, I mean, it must be so tedious. But anyways, so Jonathan...
Switching gears, one thing. Rumor has it you speak multiple languages, Jonathan.
Well, yeah, there's some of them a bit rusty, but I had a real passion for language. So yeah, when I was a kid, I learned French at school and then went over to France.
As we all did. I was either French or German, I think, at the time, yeah.
So. Yeah, I lived in France for a year when I was a student. And then I did, I studied Russian and went over to Russia and stayed with a Russian family.
That was pretty
cool. And then sort of just got, why not do a few more? So when I was at Harvard, I did some German and some Arabic, both of which I've mostly forgotten. But I had a great time learning them.
So a total of Total of how many languages?
Did some Swedish as well.
Ah.
So how many have you got? Five, six?
I've lost count. French, Russian, German, Arabic, Swedish. Five.
Five.
And English.
Okay.
What about American?
What about American? No. American.
Didn't get very good American. Didn't get better at that one.
Well, it's great you can join us, yeah. Jonathan. Really, thanks, really
thanks
appreciate
for the time
it.
Today. So, one question we always like to ask our guests is, and we see your part, your house here. I don't see, do you have any pets scurrying around? We always like to know about our guests and their pet
and
situation.
We've had many and varied. I can tell you stories about these afterwards. So.
I do not have any pets. No, I have imaginary pets because they're much easier to look after.
Okay. Well, we've had all sorts, haven't we? From the regular dogs, we've had.
But he's more on my side here with no
I think
pets.
Sheila's probably the most with half a dozen
six
or,
dogs
or more. Yeah, yeah. So, but yeah, we've had all kinds of things from
snakes, from ferrets, tigers.
Giraffes.
Ooh, it'd be good if we got someone with a tiger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ideas in your area, right? So,
big criterion right. For your next interview.
Next podcast guest must own a tiger.
Jonathan, if you're ever over in the US and you come to Florida, you must come visit us in sunny Sarasota.
I would love to.
Beautiful part of the world. And,
when the Skills Connection does their annual retreat at
that's
Joel,
right
at Joel's
on the East Coast
condo on the East Coast.
It's got to. We got to do it. We got to do it there. Indeed.
Absolutely. Well, Jonathan, it's great having you on the episode on the podcast today. We really appreciate your time. Stay well. And I'm sure we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks for having me. It's been great fun.
Take care. Thanks very much.
Okay. Bye.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye. This episode is sponsored by VTech. When you choose Star2Star and VTech for your communication needs, you get more than just a phone system. You're building a relationship with two telecommunications market leaders. No matter what your communication needs, VTech offers a comprehensive and diverse portfolio of desktop, mobility and conference devices that scale from small offices to enterprise level corporations. Peace of mind is important to you, and that's why VTech supports your business and Star2Star with North America based support professionals that truly understand your market to give you the support you need. To learn more about partnering with Star2Star and VTech, visit startostar.com and vtechphones.com.
What'd you think of Jonathan?
He's an Englishman.
As a Brit. I just want your take on him as a fellow Englishman.
Great. Lovely to talk to
Is he representing your country Englishman. Well?
I mean, he knew the area that I lived in for a while. He lived there himself. And so, where is it, David?
Abingdon.
Well done. You've remembered that. Now, you're going to go away and Google that and look it up. Check it out. So, but yeah, very, very great guy. Really interesting, fascinating subject.
Super smart.
But
very well
super, super, yeah. super guy. Yeah, I mean, educated in Oxford, and but also the languages. I mean, I mean, we went to school. You know, when I was a youngster growing up, you had the chance to learn French or German, I think. And he went on to learn several
French, so, German, yeah. Swedish, yeah, Russian, yeah. Arabic.
Yeah, how do you feel? What can you speak? American.
America. I speak about America.
I speak America. That's all I need. So yeah, very cool. Great interview.
And you know, I think it's a challenging field. I mean, I heard he was. You could hear the passion in his voice, and I would. And that to me is just the IT space and healthcare just seems so daunting.
Yeah.
But I mean, he loves it clearly, and he's definitely one of the top analysts in the industry that people go to and companies go to for information. So it's
challenging area.
Yeah,
challenging area.
That's a tough area. Any last notes for today's podcast? Anything you got?
Anything new?
Anything new? No.
What are you up to? What have you been up to? I haven't seen you in a while.
Well, I'd say I saw you two days in a row. It's a record.
This is a record. It's a record.
In the office, two straight days. Da, da, da,
da. I think I should get a medal. I think I need a medal for that.
Anyway. What kind of medals do they give out in England?
Medal?
They like Royal Army. Royalty. Or you could be knighted.
I could be Sir.
Sir Graham Potter.
Yeah, Sir Graham
I
Potter.
I think you should just tell people you were knighted. People might. I think
I've told people,
you.
But people ask me whether I knew, you know, Prince Harry and all that. So yeah, I used to drink with them in a pub. And so. Yeah,
Did you go to the royal wedding? Did you get an invite?
I couldn't go. I had a previous engagement, unfortunately. No, we were abroad actually when that.
Oh, you were in? Yeah. You were in Italy?
Yeah.
You didn't make it, neither did Meghan Markle's dad. Oh,
ooh.
Man, That's a low blow.
Yeah.
Hopefully she's not listening to the podcast.
So what have you been up to then, anyway?
I've been on the road. We've been doing road shows out with our partners. Took a little vacation for July 4th, which was nice.
Where'd you go?
Up to Michigan, see some friends. And
you got family up there? Have you? No, you got friends?
Just friends, yeah.
Well, you barely know mates.
Yeah, I have a couple friends.
Michigan.
I mean,
nice.
I pay them quite often.
Upper Peninsula.
Nice lake.
Nice up there, yeah.
I enjoyed riding in Les's new Tesla recently. That was fun. Yeah,
interesting experience.
Cool. That was
a bit of a low blow.
Beautiful car.
Actually,
so. Beautiful car.
Yeah.
Well made too. They never have issues. So. But anyways, I think that's
about
today.
It. You've got nothing else. You're done. Completely finished.
All right.
That's it.
All right. For David Portnowitz
and Graham Potter,
this has been Heads in the Cloud.